Bodies fall to the ground as the gargoyles blaze through the crowd.
They're here for me, aren't they? I ask, tugging on his sleeve. They must be.
Even if they are, they will never get to you. Trust me.
He turns, confidence and determination radiating from him. I give him a nod.
Yes, they must be here for you, for your blood.
He winces.
The only way to save the humans is to lead them away from the beach and allow everyone time to run.
He quickly comes up with a plan, but my attention is stolen by a small cry for help. Turning, I note with horror the destruction the gargoyles have already wreaked in their path. The dead bodies, the crushed stalls and blood-stained sand. But my eyes focus on something else. A child. He's maybe a few feet away from us, dragging himself in the sand, all the while crying for his parents. People run past him, some tripping over him in their hurry to leave the danger zone. He yelps in pain as he tries to fend for himself, but he can barely move. Everyone ignores him while they seek their own safety, and I can't help the sudden squeeze in my chest. Caleb! I point towards the little boy, gazing up at him and pleading with my eyes.
Darcy.
He groans, but he acquiesces, shielding me while I dash to the little one. As I reach his side, my mouth parts in horror as I note the state he is in and why he's crawling instead of walking. His tibia is fractured, a part of the bone sticking out through his flesh.
Mommy!
He cries out, his cheeks red with tears. All at once, I'm thrust back into the past and that one vision. Sela had been able to heal injuries with a touch. Would I be able to do that too? I can heal myself, but can I do it for other people as well? Although I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do, I let instinct take over as I drop to my knees before the little boy, speaking softly to him in an attempt to calm him.
Be quick, we need to move.
Caleb speaks harshly, yet his expression doesn't match his tone as he regards me with hidden longing. My heart beats loudly in my chest as I try to focus on my breathing. Placing my hands over the little boy's injury, I remember how Sela had channeled energy to her palms, letting it hum to the surface before pushing it into the boy's skin. I try to do the same. Focusing on my palms and on the energy inside of me, I summon it forth. I take a few attempts before I feel a flicker of something come to life, a pulsation at the surface of my skin. It's okay. I smile at the little boy, distracting him as I place my hand over the broken bone. Gritting my teeth, I push all the energy towards him, imagining his bone retracting, his skin and flesh mending. It doesn't happen at first, but within a few tries, I can feel the transfer of energy take place. Leaving my body, it morphs into a healing mist that envelops the injured leg. In a few seconds, no injury remains. Run, I tell him. Run and find your mother. He blinks in confusion, unable to understand what's happening. But eventually he does as told. He runs away. Did you see that? I jump to my feet. Immediately, though, a wave of dizziness hits me, and I would have hit the ground if not for the strong arms that catch me. My head swims, my entire vision about to leave me just as my body becomes limp in his arms. If it hadn't been for him, I would have never been able to keep myself upright. I'm struggling as it is to keep conscious. But how? When I heal myself, I'm fine. Sela, too, hadn't even felt the effects of healing that boy. For her, it had been second nature. So why am I suddenly so weak?
Fucking hell.
Caleb curses.
I'm proud of you, love. But you can't do that. Not now. Not when you don't have your strength back.
He chastises lightly before swooping me in his arms. I don't question him, leaning into him and releasing a deep sigh as I wrap my arms around his neck, breathing in his scent. Weak. I feel so weak. The crowd is still running amok around us,
and until now they've done a good job of masking our presence. Soon, though, one of the gargoyles spots us, its red eyes flashing across the beach, as does the pure determination reflected there, its singular purpose.
To the forest,
Caleb says, holding me closer as he starts into a full-on run. There are some people around who tried to hide in the marshes, and in an attempt to draw the creatures away, Caleb takes a different path than the rest. The gargoyle follows, with the other three close on its trail. It's working, I tell him, struggling to keep my focus as my body is still languid from healing the boy. They're coming after us and leaving the people alone.
Gargoyles, just like the Kiaka, are creatures that have a master, someone who gives them orders. It's clear that whoever is behind this told them to target you.
He purses his lips.
I thought the bracelet Rhiannon gave you would have helped.
Why do you think they chose this celebration? Out in the open like this?
Because you barely go out, Darcy. And it seems Rhiannon's wards have become stronger so nothing can penetrate the house. The only option is to catch you outside of the manor.
But the people...
Do you think they care about the people? Not when the prize is right in front of them.
He adds tersely, hugging me closer to his chest as he makes his way out of the marsh and into the forest, losing ourselves between the tall trees. As we take cover behind a fallen log, Caleb gently lays me down.
We won't be able to defeat all of them like this. I'm going to ask you to do something, darling. I'm sorry about this, but it's the only thing that might help.
What is it?
This,
he says, as he rips another bit of material from my dress.
I need your blood on it to lure them away until I can find a weapon to fight them.
But... I bite my lip, not liking the idea of being parted from him, of knowing he might be in danger. Do you know how to fight a gargoyle? He gives a brisk nod.
They have impenetrable skin, save for one spot under their right wing. But I need to get close enough to stab them there.
He purses his lips.
There are four of them. I need to know you're safe and away from them so I can focus on this. You get me?
He seeks my gaze with his, and I can see the worry reflected there. Okay, we'll do it your way. Just please take care. I don't want you to get hurt. I take his hand in mine, squeezing tightly and bringing it to my lips for a good luck kiss. He's watching me intently, almost as if he's memorizing my features.
I would do anything to keep you safe, Darcy. Anything.
He emphasizes. Leaning forward, he brushes his lips across my forehead.
Soon you'll be mine. No more delays and no more excuses. I'm claiming every inch of you.
He rasps against my skin. Yet before I can reply, he's off me. Taking his jacket off, he removes a switchblade from a pocket, and unsheathing the knife, he gives me a questioning look. Extending my hand towards him, I point to my palm. Gingerly taking my hand in his, he brings it to his mouth for a kiss before he lays the blade against my flesh.
I'm sorry,
he whispers. The pain is brief. Blood pools to the surface, and he wastes no time in smearing the red liquid all over the piece of fabric. Moments trickle by, and slowly my wound starts closing. Yet it doesn't happen as fast as before. The healing process is sluggish, and I anxiously wait for my wound to seal. Eventually it does, and only a few errant drops of blood remain on my skin. Bringing it to his lips, Caleb licks my hand clean before he gets to his feet.
Stay out of sight. If anything happens, run and find another hiding place. I'll find you. Don't worry about me.
With that, he's gone. More noises erupt in the air, howls from the gargoyles and screams from the people. Though we'd drawn them away, I don't doubt the others have to deal with the casualties and the destruction the gargoyles had wreaked around. Fear mounts inside of me as I think of Caleb alone out there facing these terrifying creatures. Though I don't doubt his physical prowess, since I know he spent almost a decade in the army, These aren't enemy troops he has to fight against. These are supernatural creatures with who knows what abilities. Bringing my hands together, I say a quick prayer for Caleb, hoping he will be victorious and he will find me, as he promised. At the same time, I can't help but think about who would send the gargoyles after me. I'm sure everyone will be quick to say it's Aemon, yet why do I not believe that? The sound of leaves rustling puts me on guard, just as it dawns on me that there are four. Four against one. Dear God, but how can Caleb survive against four creatures by himself? The more I think of him overpowered and hurt, the more I blame myself and my uselessness. Not only am I in the middle of this conflict I want no part in, but I have absolutely no clue how to defend myself. So what if I have these abilities, these healing powers? They are useless in open combat. Some time passes as I continue to despair over Caleb, huddled against the fallen log and shielding myself from view. A sudden thud gets my attention, and mustering enough courage, I move slightly out of my hiding place to gaze in the clearing ahead. Nothing. Thinking it might be a ground dweller and nothing else, I take a deep breath as I return to my spot. Yet the moment I turn, I come face to face with one of those ugly creatures. A few feet from me, he's staring at me with those red eyes, his nostrils flaring as he studies me. The gargoyle's skin is a muddy brown with an ashy tone. The wings themselves remind me of bat wings, but 100 times bigger. And when he releases a loud howl, I realize that not only am I in trouble, he likely announced my location to his buddies. Swallowing hard, I get to my feet, finding a piece of harder wood on the ground and using it as a sword stick of sorts. Even in this life and death situation, I can't help but laugh at the absurdity of it. I'm facing a creature with impenetrable skin, and I'm waving a twig? It doesn't matter, though. I'll give my all to this fight. I'm not about to back down just because I'm ill-equipped or not equipped at all for such a situation. Bring it on, bad guy. I push my chin up, wielding the twig as I step over the log and back away. The gargoyle is still in front of me, its eyes narrowing dangerously just as he takes a step forward. His wings flap once, and he's in front of me. Jesus, but he must be over 10 feet tall. I blink, my eyes widening as I realize I stand no chance, especially as one of his enormous hands reaches for me, his fingers wrapping around me even as I try to step out of his path. Good Lord, is he going to eat my head next? Squeezing my eyes shut, I pray for a brief death. Do you feel if someone rips your head off your body? I suppose you don't get enough of a warning to do so, considering how fast he chewed that other man's head off. The scenarios are piling up in my mind at an alarming speed, and I barely realize that nothing happens. Not only is my head still attached to my body, but the gargoyle hasn't moved an inch. Slowly opening one eye, I realize why he hasn't moved. My entire body has an odd glow to it, and the gargoyle is tilting his head right and left as he's studying me, probably as confused as I am with its origin. Yet just as I'm about to start struggling in his hold or do something with my twig, the gargoyle's body explodes. That's it. One moment I'm being held by this giant creature who's probably wondering what I taste like. The next, I'm falling to the ground covered in all types of gargoyle matter. His blood is gray. My face scrunches up in disgust, especially as the stench hits me. Not only did the whole giant gargoyle blow up, but so did his gut, which happened to be digesting all those human bits. Bile rises up my throat, my stomach in knots as I drag myself away from the slaughter. Of course, I'm very relieved to find myself still in possession of my head and other limbs, but I still can't wrap my head around what happened. Pun intended. It wasn't me. That I know for sure. Whenever I'm using my abilities, I can feel the energy surging around, almost like it's a separate entity. This time, I'd felt nothing until I'd seen the odd glow surrounding my body before the gargoyle had detonated in front of me. Still, not one to overly question my good luck, I take a few clean breaths as I force myself to my feet, a little wobbly from the surge of adrenaline and fear that still resides in my limbs. When the thoughts of danger subside, I can only think of Caleb. Is he fine? Is he... I don't even want to entertain the thought that something might have happened to him. Knowing I cannot remain here with the gargoyle remains, who knows if they have a super-developed sense of smell, I start in the direction Caleb had taken off. At the same time, I know I'm also running the risk of discovery by virtue of my stained clothes alone. Not a while later, I hear the sound of water, as well as remembering that Mr. Vaughn had told me about a river with a waterfall around Fairydale. Thinking I could go and quickly rinse the gargoyle goo off my body, I follow the sound of water. Luckily, it doesn't take me long to find the river. Despite being the beginning of October, the surrounding area is still somewhat green. The water is crisp and clear and exactly what I need. Walking alongside the riverbank, it takes me about 5 minutes to reach the waterfall. Just like Mr. Vaughn had said, the view is breathtaking. The waterfall is some 15 feet, and the river currents don't seem to be overly strong. Satisfied with my assessment of the area and the fact that I could take a chance and clean myself, I waste no time in tugging the dress off my body, holding my breath every time I smell gargoyle on me. When I reach my underthings, I decide against taking them off. I guess I am a little daring, but not that adventurous. Dipping my toes first, I wince at the first bite of the cold water. We're already in autumn, and the temperature in the river must have dropped a lot. Still, it's either that or monster bodily fluids that might attract other monsters. All things considered, I think I'm going to take my chances. Steeling myself against the cold, I proceed to dive headfirst into the river. Surprisingly, it's not very deep, and when I'm standing in the middle of it, the water only reaches the top of my breasts. Smiling as my body acclimates to the coldness, I duck underwater a few more times as I scrub my scalp. Blood, guts, and probably bone got tangled in my hair, and it's not exactly easy to get out. When I feel thoroughly clean and ready to go, I emerge to the surface and start wading towards the shore. Except...
I told you I'd find you, darling.
Caleb smirks at me as he's leaning against a tree. I gasp at his sudden appearance, but I forget all about my shame as I study him carefully for any sign of injury. Even better, he helps my perusal as he takes off his shirt and pants, until he remains only in his underwear. My cheeks heat despite the coldness of the water, yet I can't look away. It's my first time seeing a man in such a state of déshabillé, and I have to admit, I am not disappointed. Just like my first impression of him, Caleb Hale is a mountain of a man. His body is only muscle, his abs hard and defined, his thighs equally as powerful. Every inch of him is pure brawn, and I don't think I've ever seen a more mouth-watering sight. What happened? I ask as he dives into the water, slowly coming towards me. What about the gargoyles? Are they...
They're dead.
He confirms, and I release a relieved breath. Thank God, I exclaim. And you? Are you hurt anywhere? He shakes his head, that arresting smile still playing at his lips.
I killed 3, and a 4th I found already dead. You left the clearing.
He raises a brow. I couldn't stay and wait for more to appear, I grumble. And I was covered in gargoyle bodily fluids, not exactly the best perfume on the market. He chuckles as he reaches my side. He brings his hands on my shoulders as he stabilizes me next to him.
What happened to it?
I give him a short summary, finding him as perplexed as I was at how easily the creature had exploded. Pursing his lips, he seems deep in thought. But I nibble at my bottom lip. I wonder if they weren't here to kill me, I ask, a theory going through my mind.
You would be right. Whoever wants to use your blood would not risk that. They would kidnap you to have it all readily available. The gargoyles were your escorts, so to speak.
I'm conflicted, Caleb. Why now? Why not when I went alone to Mr. Nicholson's house?
Why indeed?
He muses, though his expression tells me the exact reason. Is it him? I ask in a whisper. Is it him who wants me? But why, if we're related? I just can't make sense of this.
Don't trust anyone, Darcy.
He states resolutely as he cups my cheeks with his big palms.
Everyone is looking out for their own interests. You must do so as well.
What about you? I draw back, searching his face. Are you looking for your interests as well? Yet there's the unspoken question. What are your interests? So far, I've inferred that both Rhiannon and Mr. Nicholson have a stake in Aemon's imprisonment, and though I don't know what their personal goal is, I'm sure it has something to do with that ritual they want me to help with. Yet Caleb, he's secretive and mysterious. So far, I haven't been able to pinpoint what his goal is.
Of course.
He readily admits.
And I only have one interest.
He continues, as if reading my mind. I tilt my head as I wait for his answer.
You.
He declares. Me. I echo, confused.
You've asked me about war before, sweetheart. It's true that I've seen many wars. I fought too many battles to count. At some point in my life, all I knew was devastation. I did as I was told because I never knew otherwise. I never knew how to live my life without bloodshed. But then I met you and...
He smiles.
You're just a ray of sunshine, aren't you? Making everyone fall in love with you everywhere you go.
Fall in love? I falter, afraid I didn't understand him right.
Yes, Darcy, darling. That is exactly what I mean. I've fallen in love with you. Fast. Hard. So fucking deep. Like I never thought I would fall for someone.
He confesses, his voice thick with emotion. My lids flutter as I regard him, committing his features to memory as he looks in this moment, all hard edges and killer aura. Yet there's the gentlest smile on his lips, and the most intoxicating love in his gaze, and I know he speaks the truth. Slowly, as if he's handling a precious jewel, he brings me closer to his body. All the while, his gaze is on me to gauge my reactions, showing me that he can be a true gentleman, mindful of my sensibilities.
I want you to be mine, darling. I want to taste and worship every inch of you, drive you so fucking mad with passion you will never think of anyone else but me. Only ever me. That's what I need, sweetheart.
He growls, almost as if frustrated with himself.
I want to keep you to myself, tuck you away from the world, and protect you from all the dangers out there, all the perversities and all the fucked up shit that goes on in this fucked up world. I only want that for you. I only want you to be mine, Darcy, darling. Now, tomorrow, and to the end of time.
Caleb, I don't get to speak as he fits his lips to mine in what can only be considered an assault on the senses. The previous kiss I'd given him is quickly forgotten as I realize I'd been playing a child's game. Then, I'd brushed my lips against his in what I consider to be a kiss. Now, he proves me wrong. He channels all the aggression, all the emotions bottled up within him in this kiss. His lips on mine, his mouth devouring mine until I lose myself. Until, just like he said, I become his, and only his. But just as it starts, it's over. He draws back, breathing hard and studying me closely for my reaction. He's testing the ground. But how dare he give me a taste of paradise, only to take it away? Winding my arms around his neck, I raise myself on the tips of my toes, easily done in the water, and I press myself against him. The length of my body meets his, just as I reclaim my kiss.
Fucking hell, Darcy.
He curses against my mouth before he kisses me like I never thought a kiss could be. His tongue dives into my mouth, meeting mine and inviting it to a tantalizing dance that has me squirming against him. Heat builds up in my body, so much so the water must be boiling by now. Dragging his open mouth on top of mine, he gives me a languid lick, then another, almost as if he's tasting and savoring me. A deep groan erupts from his throat as he brings his big hands to my bottom, cupping my ass and inviting me to open my legs so he can step between them, so he can bring his hardness in contact with my center and... Caleb, I moan into his mouth. What?
Tell me you're mine. Tell me you're mine, love.
He chants, nibbling at my lips between earth-shattering kisses.
Tell me.
He suddenly demands. I'm yours, I agree. Yours, I repeat, as I emulate his movements, threading my hands through his thick hair and biting at his lips.
That's it.
He speaks softly, encouragingly.
Just like that, darling. Suck my tongue into your mouth.
He commands, and I can only obey.
Fuck, you're so hot.
He rasps, alternating between kissing me deeply and licking my face, as if he wouldn't want to leave any inch of me untasted. Just like he promised. I never knew kissing could be so. I trail off, simply at a loss for words. My breathing is harsh, my heart hammering in my chest, and my soul is singing in my body, asking to be let out for a true mating dance with this man. Heat builds inside of me, so much so it's close to bursting to the surface. All the passion, all the longing, all the want, all that I've repressed before is now emerging, is now coming to the surface for this man, and this man alone. You make me hot, Caleb, I admit, slowly biting on my lip as I bring my naked gaze to his. You make me want to shed all my inhibitions and everything that holds me back. But I...
Marry me,
he suddenly says. My eyes grow wide as I still in his arms. What? I stammer. Did I hear him right? Did he just ask me to... marry him?
Marry me, Darcy.
He repeats, and I can sense the sincerity that laces his voice, as well as the emotion and the true desire behind his words. He wants this. What? How? I...
It's not only this maddening attraction that's simmering between us. It's also the fact that you bring me more peace than I've ever known.
He tells me with a soft smile.
I respect your principles, and I would never try to pressure you into doing anything you didn't want or weren't ready for. But I also want to make my commitment clear to you. I want you, and everything that you are.
That's a lot to take in. I've never been proposed to before. I let out a nervous laugh.
Well, you better not, or I would have to comb this world and get rid of every man who thought he could have a shot with you.
I giggle at the absurdity, but why do I have the impression he's not kidding? Marriage is a big thing, I continue.
Exactly. It's a lifelong commitment, and beyond. So marry me, Darcy. Be mine. Forever.
The sun is setting, the sky turning into an orange hue as the light becomes sparser and sparser. Still, it's enough to illuminate his handsome features and his black, black eyes that hold my heart captive. In spite of everything that has happened, in spite of my dreams and visions, and admittedly strange encounters with Aemon, I cannot deny that Caleb owns my heart. Slowly, yet steadily, I've been falling for him from day one. A pang of guilt reverberates in my chest as I think of Aemon, but he's nothing more than an echo of the past, if that's even real. There are too many doubts to even begin assembling a concrete picture. He's a demon. A captive demon believed to terrorize the entire town. Caleb is a man. A flesh-and-blood man that's present before me, telling me he's in love with me. Okay, I whisper, deciding to push my thoughts about Aemon aside, shove them into a little box and seal it shut. Caleb is the present. He is my now, and he is the one who's been on my side, fighting for me and with me from day one. I'll marry you. Chapter 18. I wake up at dawn. The house is dead quiet, which gives me hope that no one else is mad enough to be up at this unconscionable hour. Yet, despite the strain on my body from yesterday's events, I could not sleep, not with so many erratic thoughts and never-ending dilemmas. My stomach is still humming with pleasure from Caleb's proposal, the taste of his kiss lingering on my lips and making me look forward to seeing him again today. But this time it's not him who is the cause of my confusion. He's the only thing I am sure of. Rather, it's everything that's happening around me, and the fact that my blood seems to be so precious for no specific reason. It's the fact that I've recently discovered I have powers, but now I realize they come with severe limitations. More than anything, it's in the fact that someone is directly targeting me. Whether it's Aemon, Mr. Nicholson, someone in the Hale family, or someone I do not yet know, I can't help but suspect everyone. Light filters through the wide windows of the hallway, illuminating the staircase and every corner of the house. Thankful that I won't need to use a candle, I slowly make my way downstairs. Aside from the Hales, few people work in the staff kitchens on the lowest level, between the ground floor and the catacombs. As far as I'd understood it, they do not reside in the house. Rather, they are townsfolk who'd agreed to work for a wage. I hadn't interacted with them much, whether because our paths never really crossed or they purposefully avoided me, I do not know. But the one time I'd seen them, they'd advised me against visiting that area of the house due to its infestation with rodents. One of the older women had told me they've been having a hard time controlling the rodent population down there, and they've resorted to all types of traps and poisons to ensure they didn't spread further to other parts of the house. though it had barely been a passing mention, as I became increasingly frustrated with my situation and the fact that I do not understand my abilities, nor do I know my limitations, the idea had come to me as I'd woken up. Determination brims inside of me as I stride over to the lower quarters. Luckily, though the staff hasn't arrived yet, the doors aren't closed. Remembering the areas I'd heard were most infested, I check those first, the cupboards and the small crevices. To my great surprise, I find plenty of rats squirreled away in a corner, some dead, some half alive. Grabbing a box and a pair of gloves, I plucked them by the tail and dropped them in the box, one at a time. There are about three that still move a little, which leads me to believe they've likely ingested poison and are well on their way to the grave. There's a fourth dead one, and I add it too, thinking Mr. Meow might like some food. For a wildcat, I haven't really seen him chase mice or birds, as is the way of cats. He accepts what I feed him, but he doesn't have the inclination to procure his own. It's a wonder how he's made it on his own until now. Still, he's not a domesticated cat, and I have no doubt he misses his prey and raw meat, so I'm sure he will appreciate my little gift. Box in tow, I head back to my room. Mr. Meow is on my pillow, stretching languidly and grooming himself. He always makes himself at home in my bed. I think I'm the only human he likes, though, because whenever someone else comes along, he either runs away or bares his teeth at them. Not very nice cat behavior, which I've reprimanded him for. "I have a surprise for you, Mr. Meow," I declare as I close the door behind me, locking it just in case. The last thing I need is for someone to come across my little experiment and think me mad. Mr. Meow jumps up, his ears perking as he hears my voice. Coming towards me, he regards the box in my hand curiously. I beckon him to the bathroom where I place the box on the floor. Still wearing my gloves, I take the dead rat out by its tail, waving it in front of Mr. Meow. "I got you raw meat," I tell him, dropping to my knees and placing it in front of him. "I'm sorry I've only fed you human food until now, but this is your special treat." The rat isn't particularly big, but it should fill Mr. Meow nonetheless. Yet, as I regard my dear friend expectantly with a wide smile on his face, I realize he doesn't seem particularly thrilled, at least not as I expected him to be. He's flinching away, and if he had a human nose, I'm pretty sure it would be scrunched up in disgust. "Don't tell me you don't like it." My face falls. Yet, when he sees my disappointment, he immediately reacts. If at first he'd seemed put off by the dead rat in front of him, now he leans forward, smelling the meat before bringing his sharp claws to scrape at the hide, digging into the rat and bringing his snout into its cavity. "That's my sweet boy," I coo at him, patting him on the head. Seeing him munch with gusto, I decide to switch my attention to my own little experiment. Settling on the floor next to Mr. Meow, I pluck one semi-alive rat from the box, placing it in front of me and regarding it carefully. Do I need to remove my gloves, I wonder? Not entirely thrilled about the prospect of touching a rat, I slowly take my gloves off, depositing them to the side. The rat has a few spasms as it undoubtedly struggles between life and death. "What fails for me is more food for you, Mr. Meow," I tell him with a wink.
"Meow."
I'm not sure yet if that's a yes, please, or a no, thank you. But seeing that he's enjoying the rat, I'll take it as the former. "Now let's see," I murmur as I bring my hands over the rat, focusing my energy into my palms. Like before, I need to feel the energy at the surface of my skin, almost like a sleek film covering my palms. A slow hum accompanies it, and my skin starts pulsating. At the same time, the rat becomes increasingly more active, moving around until it suddenly jumps up, newly revitalized. "It worked, Mr. Meow! It worked!" I exclaim in wonder. Yet, just as I try to move, the same lightheadedness as before descends over me, to the point that I feel my eyes roll back in my head. I fall back on my ass, stretching my arms back just in time so I don't fall flat on my back. At the same time, the rat becomes straight up rambunctious, wasting no time in running around. "Mr. Meow!" I call out, my eyes growing wide. It was fine when the rat wasn't moving, but now, seeing it slither its way around my bathroom, heading straight for me, has my skin erupt in goosebumps, an unwelcome add-on to my mounting headache. Mr. Meow, though, proves to me that he is a veritable wild cat by jumping on top of the rat and catching it with his claw, effectively stopping its movements. "Maybe I shouldn't have brought so many," I sigh. One or two would have sufficed, seeing that I can barely heal one before I get dizzy. Turning my gaze to the box, I note that the other two have already stopped moving, likely a sign that they've died. "Damn it," I curse softly. Yet there's still something else to be done. A little more difficult than I would have liked, I slowly manage to get to my feet. Washing my hand with soap and water, I take a blade from the cabinet and aim it at my open palm. Since I don't know how fast I will be healing now, I can't afford to nick any important veins. "This is the moment, Mr. Meow. Let's see if my theory is correct." Making a shallow cut, I watch as blood slowly seeps to the surface. Mr. Meow surprises me by climbing on the cabinet and pushing his little snout against me. "What?" I turn to him. He takes advantage of my momentary lack of attention to dive straight for my hand, lapping at the blood until the wound is clear. And not healing. Or if it is, it's very slow. Quickly glancing at my wristwatch, I note the time as I wait for it to close. Usually it takes a second for it to do so. Now, after 5 minutes, there is still a tiny scar. It's only at the 7-minute mark that the wound disappears completely. "What do you think, Mr. Meow?" I ask pensively as I stare at my hand. It seems that by healing someone else, my energy goes down to such an extent that not only do I get physically weak, but my own wounds no longer heal at the same rate. I start, voicing my observations. On the other hand, if I focus only on healing my own wounds, they heal within seconds. I think we can surmise that I have a limited supply of this, energy or ability or whatever it is. It seems to be a replenishable resource, since once I rest, I do feel better, and my wounds heal faster again. But overall, there seems to be a limit to how much I can do, and that means... I swallow hard at the implications. How foolish of me to think myself invincible when I'd first found out about these strange abilities. It was my own hubris and folly that could have led me down a dangerous path had I not realized my own limitations. This means I can die. Without enough energy, my body will not heal and I can die. I whisper in horror. If I participate in the rituals Rhiannon or Mr. Nicholson wants me to, there is a very good chance I will die. And there is one variable I have not considered. What is the basis of my energy? Is it my blood? It could be, since everyone seems to want it. But if that is so, then if I lose too much blood, I will be in danger. Mr. Meow, is it just me, or... I pause, focusing on my now non-existent wound. I might die either way. Mr. Nicholson wants to use my blood for some alternative ritual, while Rhiannon wants to use me to channel the spell. By her own admission, she would happily die to rid the town of evil. No matter how I look at this, there is only one potential outcome. My demise. To perform any spell would mean my end. Then what about Aemon? It is my understanding that if the spell they mean to cast doesn't succeed, he will walk free. Aemon. Free. I gulp down against the wave of emotion that hits me as I think of him. Rhiannon, nor Mr. Nicholson had given me any details about his state of imprisonment, where or how. They'd simply stated he was somewhere in Fairydale, and his influence extends to the borders of the city. Yet as soon as I think about Eamon walking free, I can't help but wonder what I would do then. Maybe I could meet him and... God, I'm such a fool, I mutter to myself. I am a confused fool that agreed to marry one man while still wavering about the other, while still very much having feelings for him. I've never personally met Eamon in this life, but we've been together in at least 2 lifetimes before, one where I did not have the mark, and one when I did. If he weren't trapped, would I be with him now, too? Would he have found me and seduced me as he did in the past? Some things simply don't add up, from Rhiannon's or Fiona's sides. If my mark was so important, then why would Eamon have been with me when I didn't have it? Hundreds of years, if not thousands, before I ever had that mark. The more I dwell on this dilemma, the more I get to only one primary question. What does this mark truly mean? I think Rhiannon and I are due for another talk, one where she no longer lies to me. Let's clean this mess up, Mr. Meow. I sigh as I bring myself to the present and place the dead rats back in the box before I go trash it. As soon as the hour becomes more reasonable, I steel myself and head to Rhiannon's lodgings. Luckily, I bump into Katrina on her way to school, and she shows me where Rhiannon's room is. Just be careful. She doesn't really like it when people invade her sanctuary. She gives me a warning before she leaves. Invade? That sounds ominous, doesn't it? Steeling myself, I walk towards the end of the wing where Rhiannon's rooms are, knocking on the door. Surprisingly, it slowly opens by itself, and I'm beckoned inside. Rhiannon? I ask as I step inside. The entire room is like a jungle, overgrown plants everywhere. I slither my way through the tall branches and leaves, wondering why she would need to have them in her room when she had the entire conservatory at her disposal. There's a small arch a few steps in front of me, and passing through it, I find myself in a seemingly entirely different location. Rhiannon? It's Darcy! I call out, looking right and left. Whereas the other room was full of plants, this one is full of books, and not just any books. As I peruse some of the volumes, I note I've seen them once before, in Fiona's library. But how would they have ended up with Rhiannon? In the back! Rhiannon's voice sounds out. I put the matter out of my mind as I go to the back as instructed. Yet another arch delimits this room from the next. Frowning, I let my gaze roam around, finding Rhiannon tending to a boiling pot. All around, there are jars with ingredients and vials of potions, making me believe this is a laboratory of sorts. What a surprising visit, Darcy. What brings you here? She smiles at me as she rises from her seat, pushing her glasses up her nose. She regards me intently. I wanted to talk to you more about my birthmark. I jump straight to the topic. I wish to know everything there is about it. Her brows go up.
And what brought about this curiosity?
I'm curious about this ability you say I have. She nods to herself.
Well, since we are here, you can look at the original source material, she says, as she leads me to an empty table.
Before I can wonder what she means, she waves her hand, whispering a phrase in Latin, and the bottom of the table opens up to reveal a huge vellum manuscript, a codex. As it reaches the surface, its pages flip until it settles on the illustration of the woman with the mark. Just like before, the drawing is accompanied by a few rows of text.
This is the main information we have, but there's also the account of the elder who encountered it.
When did that happen?
Sometime in the 6th century A.D.
She sighs. My eyes widen as I remember Fiona mentioning the Codex Duatorum was from the 6th century, too. Could there be any connection?
It was the year 536 A.D., somewhere near Ravenna. It's not a coincidence. They call it the worst year to be alive, and it's all because of that demon.
Rhiannon spits the words in distaste. Using her abilities, she projects the account from that elder on the wall.
The scroll with the original account is kept in the archives at the Vatican, as are all the important documents that have not been incorporated in the codices.
I can make out the script, but I'm not the best at Latin, so I rely on Rhiannon to translate it. The elder describes noticing an unusual male in Ravenna in the summer of 536. The male seemed to have particular abilities, and he didn't belong to any of the covens. That raised the alarm for this elder, and he proceeded to follow him. The male was often in the company of a woman, and the elder immediately thought she might be in danger from him. He triggered the alarm with his superiors, thinking it might be a demon preying on a poor and unassuming woman, but his request to intervene was denied. The elder didn't give up, and he continued to follow the male around until he heard a ruckus in the lodgings the male was sharing with the woman. He immediately burst through, hoping to save her. But it was too late, because by that point, the demon had already fed off her life's energy. He had not been strong enough to defeat the demon, and the creature had fled with the body of the woman. The elder had noticed the mark above her left breast, and he'd thought it odd, so he'd remembered to sketch it in case it proved of importance later on.
The saga didn't end there.
Rhiannon purses her lips as she brings forth another page.
Back then, our codices weren't split. There was a single one that belonged to the supreme authority. The demon stole the original codex.
What? My eyes widen.
We don't know what he meant to do with it, or if he used any of the forbidden spells. But when the supreme authority delegated a team to go after him, a member of each of the current 6 families, they were easily defeated. Aemon incinerated the codex. Luckily, the elder who'd raised the alarm about him was one of the experts on the codex during that time, and he was able to recreate most of it from memory. For the first time, the supreme authority decided that having all precious information in one place was too dangerous, so the most powerful spells were split.
What about Aemon?
He disappeared for a long time, but not before wreaking havoc on Earth. Many thought the apocalypse was upon them,
she says, as she pulls up multiple other accounts from the time. Some recount that the sky had darkened, similar to an eclipse. Others say that a cloud of darkness had descended upon them. Historically, however, soon after, a devastating plague had started in the Byzantine Empire, one that the coven attributed to Aemon.
There isn't a lot of information about the mark, but the elder who discovered everything theorized that the energy from that woman must have been enormous, for we had never encountered such a powerful entity before. Aemon was and is the most powerful demon the coven has ever fought.
If there isn't a lot of information about the mark, then how did you come to the conclusion that the owner of it has such powerful healing abilities? Rhiannon gives me a sad smile.
The elder had some theories, and they were confirmed with Elizabeth Mondford. When she was born, her mother was declared dead. It was a difficult birth, and she bled out. Everyone who was at the scene witnessed the pure cloud of energy that formed around them. One moment, the priest was ready to give her the last rites. The next, she was perfectly fine. No injuries. Even her scars from the pregnancy had been healed. It was then that they recognized the mark and made the connection.
and then you bound her powers. I note, narrowing my eyes.
No one could take a chance. We've seen healing abilities before, but never to that extent. Fiona was dead. There are people who can heal small injuries, but there has never been anyone to raise someone from the dead.
I didn't realize the mark was that powerful, I whisper, though the rat comes to mind. I can't say for sure, but it had been more dead than alive. Could it be that...
The elders gathered together and they voted to bind her powers. The spell was one of the forbidden ones, and as such, irreversible. They hoped that by doing that, they could avoid the same situation.
I give a dry laugh. That is what I don't understand. Was it for Elizabeth's good, or was it to avoid anyone else getting their hands on her abilities?
Both,
Rhiannon replies firmly, and I can tell she believes it implicitly. If there's one thing I'm getting out of this meeting, it's that Rhiannon has blindly put her faith into the coven and their version of events. Regardless of the questions that arise regarding their policies and manner of action, she truly believes the coven can do no wrong. All right, I nod, going along with her explanation. Then tell me something. Why did my abilities only develop after I came to Fairydale?
I cannot give you a proper answer, Darcy. I'm telling you what I know as well. But I agree that there are gaps in our knowledge when it comes to your birthmark.
Then how could you ask me to risk my life in your ritual if you don't even know what it will do to me? I might be able to heal, but it's not an exhaustive supply. Once it's gone... I trail off, letting the words sink in.
And the alternative? Eamon walks free. Is that what you want? For him to terrorize more people, kill more? Didn't you hear what I said until now? Fairydale wasn't his first time triggering a plague or unleashing total destruction. It wasn't his first time abusing and killing an innocent woman, once who was foolish enough to fall for his demonic charms.
She grits her teeth at me, her words full of frustration. Isn't all this circumstantial evidence at best? To say that he caused the Justinian plague? I want to laugh at the absurdity of it all. The Eamon I know is a good and honorable man. He might have his vicious side, but I've only ever seen him act when provoked. He would never do something to an innocent. I do not know how I am certain of this, but it's a feeling deep in my gut. Eamon D'Artagnan would never act unprovoked. Would he? How can you even be sure it was him? I counter. If they want me to believe all this nonsense, if they want me to help their cause in any way, then I need proof. Tangible proof. A snarl pulls at her lips, and before I know it, the entire room is engulfed in darkness. What? I don't get to voice my concern as the black walls suddenly become animated. I'm sitting in the middle, while all around me images are being projected onto the wall. I know this is all Rhiannon's power, yet that doesn't make me feel any less uneasy about it.
Watch!
Rhiannon's voice booms.
Watch what he did to Fairydale, and dare to tell me. We can't be sure it was him.
What's this? I ask tentatively, a shiver of doom going down my back.
This is the collective memory of that day, of every little organism that witnessed the wickedness of Eamon,
Rhiannon explains.
But I should warn you, Darcy, it gets bad. Real, real bad.
She whispers in a sad tone. Her warning has me on my guard, as I expect to see a version of Eamon like the one I'd seen before. The bloody killer who'd slaughtered 4 men with 1 snap of a wrist. Yet it's an entirely different sight that appears before me. My eyes widen as I realize the surroundings are familiar. It's the old church as I'd seen it that night. Everything is exactly the same as in my vision. But how... If it's sealed, then how could I have known how it looks? unless... I swallow hard. Maybe it's just a dormant memory from my life as Elizabeth. The organ is playing just as it had that night. Even the melody is the same. Bach's Toccata. The image focuses on the person playing. Elizabeth. God. But if before I'd seen Elizabeth through the foggy memory of my dreams, aware of her appearance only as it had been reflected back to me through the looking glass, now I can see her clearly. I can see myself clearly. It's eerie gazing upon someone who is identical to me, so much so that we could pass for twins. Yet another question arises. How in God's name had Elizabeth ended up in the old church of Fairydale? How would she have gotten here from England? I purse my lips, keeping my focus on the images before me. Elizabeth is focused on playing the organ, seemingly lost in the music, when someone steps inside the church. Amen. With a loud bang, her finger still on the keys, her head slowly turning as she gazes upon him with disdain.
Who is he?
An anguished cry is wrenched from his throat as he addresses her.
Look at me, Lizzie mine.
If before I would have been unsure of the veracity of this film, now I am more than certain. Only Eamon, the real Eamon, would have called me like that.
Please, talk to me.
He pleads with her as he walks down the aisle of the church towards the organ. She resumes playing, ignoring him. Even when he stops by her side, she keeps playing away, purposefully snubbing him.
Please, talk to me.
He whispers, his hands coming down on hers. Why? So you can tell me more lies. She slowly turns, her expression stony. So you can deceive me again.
I never lied to you.
He rasps, grabbing her into a tight embrace. Her body is languid as she lets herself be pulled into his arms. Her expression is blank, as if she's reached the end of her tether.
Please, Lizzie mine, don't do this. Don't do this to us.
Eamon whispers. Excuse me, but what am I supposed to see here? I suddenly inquire of Rhiannon. This is clearly just a lover's quarrel. I don't understand why we would look into something so intimate. Something that she has no right to see. It feels like a defilement to witness such an intimate moment without permission, and this is coming from the reincarnation of the person starring in the vision.
Just watch, dear. You will get all your answers soon.
Rhiannon tells me just as the angle of the image changes. If before we'd been looking in from the entrance of the church, now the view is from the altar. My sister! Elizabeth starts, stepping away from Eamon. I thought she had an accident with her husband, that they were injured and... Her voice breaks. 'Twas all a lie, she accuses, suddenly looking at him with a combination of disgust and contempt.
It's what happened. You know.
No! She cuts him off. They didn't have an accident. You killed them! She points her finger at him just as a tear falls down her cheek.
Lizzie, how could you say that?
Eamon tries to placate her, taking a step forward. She flinches, jumping back. You killed them, just so they wouldn't interfere with you. You knew they were coming to warn me, so you decided to take matters into your own hands. She trails off, overwhelmed by emotion. My head whips towards Rhiannon, questions written all over my face. But she merely nods at me, telling me to watch the ensuing scene. Just tell me the truth, Eamon. For one goddamn time, tell me the truth. He's staring at her, a forlorn look on his face before he releases a resigned sigh.
Yes,
he whispers, the word barely audible. How could you? How the hell could you? Elizabeth cries out as she launches herself at him, beating her arms against his chest. Who's next? The children! Me!
You have it all wrong. I did this for you, so you would be happy.
Eamon tries to explain himself. Elizabeth keeps shaking her head, her cheeks red with tears, her expression one of inconsolable pain.
No, you did it for you. Never once did you think of me.
She suddenly says, her voice cold, too cold.
I can't do this anymore, Eamon. I'm done.
Stepping back, she gives him one last look before she walks away. Yet she doesn't get to take one step before Eamon flashes himself in front of her.
What do you mean, you're done?
He snarls, his hands on her shoulders as he shakes her.
You're mine, Lizzie. You're mine and only mine. Do you think I'll ever let you go?
That's right.
She releases a dry laugh.
I'm yours because that's the only thing you care about. That I'm yours and no one else's.
She scoffs at him, pushing him off her.
You're wrong if you think you can own me. If you think you can dictate my life in any way.
She tells him resolutely before she continues on her way out.
Lizzie!
Eamon's voice thunders in the church, the intensity of his roar making the walls quake and tremble.
What do you think you're doing?
He asks, and suddenly his voice changes. No longer the human-like voice from before, now it's a full-on demonic one. A perverted quality to it that makes my skin erupt in goosebumps. God, but I don't think I've ever heard something so vile. There's no other way to put it. His cadence carries a negative energy with it that makes me want to scrape all layers of skin off my body to get rid of its stain.
Go to hell, Eamon!
Elizabeth snaps at him.
But that would be just an exotic destination for you, wouldn't it?
She snickers as she walks away. Yet just like before, she doesn't get too far. In just a second, Eamon has his hands around her throat as he pushes her against the wall. His eyes flash a mix of red and black, like I'd seen him do before, as he bares his teeth at her.
You think you can just leave me?
He snarls in the same demonic voice.
You think you can just walk away and what? Find someone else? Let another puny male human put his hands on you?
He demands roughly. Elizabeth's eyes widen, her features bathed in fear. It's the first time I see that emotion flash on her face.
Let me go.
She wheezes out. Eamon doesn't listen. Instead, his hand pulls at the material of her dress, tearing the entire bodice.
Eamon, what?
Tell me again.
He demands.
Tell me again how you're going to leave me, Lizzie.
What are you doing?
She asks, her voice laced with anxiety. He doesn't answer as he continues to pull at her clothes, ripping her gown to pieces until she's standing naked before him. Suddenly, I have an inkling of what's about to happen, and I do not want to witness anything like that.
Turn this off! I snap at Rhiannon. I don't want to watch this! Turn it off!
I repeat. But she doesn't reply. It's so dark around, save for the projection of the images, that even as I turn 360, I can't find her.
Rhiannon!
I yell. And it's exactly at that point that it happens. One moment he has her against the wall, the next he lays her flat against the ground, his hands on his breeches as he unfastens his falls. It feels like I'm swallowing glass as I watch what comes next. She's struggling in his hold, crying out for mercy and for him to stop. yet he doesn't. He holds her to the floor, his hand still on her neck as he parts her legs, settling between them before. I turn away, squeezing my eyes shut, just as her first cry of pain resounds in the air. More screams follow in quick succession, as well as his own grunts of pleasure as he ruts her like a beast. Despite her continuous cries of anguish and physical pain, despite her pleas for him to stop, he doesn't. He keeps raping her, forcing himself onto her like it was his right to do so. My eyes are still closed, the accompanying sounds the only indications of what's happening. Even so, I feel my stomach churning, nausea overtaking me just as a soul-searing pain consumes me at witnessing something like that. Eamon, my Eamon, how could he do something like that? But he's not my Eamon after all, is he? Because if this is true, then I never knew him. I only knew the pleasant face he wanted to show to me, to the world. The true him is this beast, this merciless creature that takes and takes as if it was his God-given right to own every piece of her, of me. And that's the worst, because Elizabeth isn't just one of his victims. It's me. I just watched myself get raped by a beast, and I don't think I will ever be able to erase those images from my mind, nor the sounds. Everything is ingrained deep in my memory and will likely haunt me for an eternity.
She lived through it. You must watch.
Rhiannon finally speaks.
Look, Darcy, now!
Opening my eyes, I peer tentatively to see Eamon lift his arm, his hand turning into something resembling a lance, before he brings it over her heart, stabbing her with it. 1 second. That was all it took for him to kill her. And as he steps away from her, I see the entire devastation. Her thighs are bloody and covered in semen, her eyes wide and unblinking. She's unmoving. Dead. He killed her. He really did kill her. Yet the destruction is not done. As he steps towards the nave of the church, he falls to his knees, a wild cry escaping him. A blast of power emanates from him in circular waves. At the same time, the walls to the right and left of my field of view change, showing me different sights. The village. Everyone is dying. People are spilling their guts, blood pouring out of every orifice. They are dying just like Leo Pierce died. Is that the plague?
Look what he did. Not only in Fairydale, but to all the villages nearby.
More images appear of people dying everywhere, and in the worst of manners. Eamon bellows in the church, and it's at that moment that 6 people arrive, a portal opening right next to Elizabeth's body. The first to come out is Fiona. The rest I do not know, but I can guess who they are. The other families. What ensues next is a bloody battle between them. 6 against 1, and they're barely hanging on. The fight goes on until Eamon is shackled with iron bonds, while the other witches are wasting away to the sides. And suddenly, I realize just how they died, how they'd given up their lives to seal Eamon. They'd formed a barrier and closed themselves off in the church with him, tying their own life forces together as a net to keep him away from the world. They had killed themselves, sacrificed themselves to the spell so Eamon would not walk free. As the images slowly disappear, the room comes back to its previous state.
So you see now.
Rhiannon comes by my side, laying one hand on my shoulder. My lashes are stained with tears, my soul shattering in my chest. I try to contain my erratic breathing, but the only thing I seem to be capable of is to keep myself from choking as I painstakingly inhale and exhale. Eamon,
he killed Elizabeth and everyone in Fairydale. He tortured them before they died. We call it a plague now, but it was malice of the highest order. And to stop him, the elders gave their lives to the seal. All so they could keep Eamon from walking free, from killing more.
Her words barely register in my mind, not when I'm still shaken by what I've seen, by the fact that...
You must have already noticed that you're the spitting image of Elizabeth. We believe you to be her incarnation in this life. That means that you, more than anyone, should not want him to walk free. He raped you. Killed you. As he did everyone in the village. And you know what's worse? He killed even those children. The ones he stole from your sister. The ones you raised as your own babies. How could that not convince you of the evil he is capable of?
You're not any less evil for showing that to me, I croak, barely keeping myself together.
What?
She frowns.
It is the truth, and it shows you how bad this Eamon is. It's something you need to know.
A dry laugh escapes me. You don't even realize, do you? I tilt my head. Do you care about anything other than this stupid quest?
What? She sputters. Stupid quest. How dare you? You saw how many people died. You saw what he did, and you dare.
In case you didn't realize... I pause, my throat clogging with emotion. You just made me watch myself get raped in another life. Yes, Eamon may have been awful for being the initial perpetrator, but what you did... I shake my head. Her gaze is full of indignation, ready to defend herself and her priceless mission. What about me, then? What about the fact that I may never in my life forget what I saw? But then it dawns on me. Why would that matter if I might not even live long enough? My mouth twists into a sardonic smile. She doesn't understand it. She thinks herself so self-righteous standing there, on the side of the coven, and telling me what a bad guy Eamon is, that she doesn't see herself. Without saying another thing, I simply leave. I fear that if I stay on, I won't be responsible for my actions. The only thought residing in my mind as I dash down the stairs is that I need to be alone, close myself to the world so I can let the tears fall freely. I barely look where I'm going as I hurry to my room, closing myself in the bathroom. Mr. Meow sees my anxious state and tries to claw his way at the door, but I don't let him in. I can't even face him at this point. With shaky hands, I snap open the buttons on my dress, letting it fall to the ground as I stand naked in front of the mirror. My gaze moves over my face, Elizabeth's, Sella's, before going lower to my birthmark and to my body. Good Lord, but what I'd seen! A sob racks my body as the images continue to assault me. The sight of Eamon with his hand around my throat, holding me immobile while he had his way with me. His bruising hold, and the way he'd snapped at me replay in my mind, his voice echoing and making me physically flinch. Bringing my hands to my ears, I try to push it out of my mind, yet I cannot. It's there, taunting me, mocking me and my foolish feelings. I stumble out of my clothes, stepping into the tub and turning on the shower, letting the water wash over me and drown out the sound of my sobs and tears, the cries that no one cares to hear. Because hadn't Rhiannon said just that? It doesn't matter what happened to me before. It only matters what I'll do about it now. She only needs me to act against Aemon, as a weapon, not a human. She cares nothing about me or my feelings, only what I can provide for her and her coven. And Aemon... good God. But Aemon, my Aemon, how could he do something like that? My wails become louder as something inside me shatters. The mere thought that he could act against me in violence, in such a vile manner, proving my undoing. I'd been told time and time again what type of person he was, that he was evil personified, but I still kept the belief that he was good to me, just like he'd promised. Maybe he was bad to the world, but to me, he was good. It's so hypocritical of me to admit it, but as long as he was mine, as long as he did everything for me and never against me, I would have been fine with it. I would have accepted anything and everything, because he was mine. And that was my ultimate fault. Thinking that someone could change who they are at their core, that I would be the exception to the rule. Over and over again, I've been told about his deeds against Fairydale and the world. By Fiona, by Rhiannon, by Mr. Nicholson. Everyone had agreed that he was a powerful demon who only cared about himself and wreaking destruction to the world, that he relished spreading evil wherever he went. I'd been told this, and still, in my heart, I chose to keep a glimmer of hope. That it was all fake, that it was a misunderstanding, because otherwise my heart couldn't have been so damn full of him. My soul couldn't have belonged so entirely to him. If he'd been that evil, that type of scourge, it wasn't possible that I would have ever fallen in love with him. And yet I had. That is what hurts the most. I'd fallen for him time and time again. As Sella, he'd been my whole world, and I'd considered myself unworthy of him. I'd sensed that the moment I'd gazed upon him. I'd loved him deeply. Too deeply, one might say. As Elizabeth, I'd slowly fallen for him, second after second in his presence. And he had me wrapped around his finger. He'd made me this thrall. And as Darcy, I remember every other life, and I remember all the feelings. For that and that alone, I know that a piece of myself belongs to him, irrevocably. But now I have to come face to face with my own failings, and the fact that I'm in love with a monster, that I gave away a piece of myself to that monster. The tears continue to fall just as the water courses down my skin, its warmth enveloping me in a big blanket of comfort. Why? I croak between sobs. Why did I have to come to Fairydale? Why did I have to return to this miserable place that is the root of all my misfortune? Though I am lost to my sorrows, I can't ignore the fact that the water is becoming increasingly colored. At first a pinkish hue, before becoming redder under my gaze. I suddenly stand up, confused, terrified, and heartbroken. For a moment, I can't possibly figure out where the color is coming from. But as a trickle of blood makes its way down my thigh, I finally realize the source. My period. Damn it all to hell, but why did it have to come right at this moment? Right when I look at the droplets of blood, I'm reminded of the images Rhiannon had shown me, of the fact that Aemon had forced himself between my legs, hurting me until my entire body was bloody and battered. Something snaps within me at that moment, and grabbing a small block of soap, I move it all over my skin, lathering myself in it, in an attempt to cleanse myself and get rid of his soiling touch. I wash myself everywhere, every inch of my skin. Yet when my hand reaches between my legs, I hesitate. A cry is wrenched from my throat as I fall to my knees into the bath, the impact bruising my flesh. Yet I can't bring myself to care. Not about any injury I might sustain, or the pain I will feel. After all, pain is what I'm looking for. I want to hurt. Anything to dim the guilt and heart-wrenching sadness I'm feeling. And so I bring my nails to my skin, scrubbing myself clean. What the soap didn't cleanse, my sharp nails will. Dragging them down my arms, I see the red trails left behind, the irritation of the skin, and at times, the deep lacerations. Blood trickles to the surface, just to be drowned out as my skin melds together. So I do it again, and again. I scrub myself until I feel like my skin is about to fall off, and it's still not enough. Will it ever be enough? Yet no matter how much I clean my body, I can barely bring myself to touch that spot at the junction of my thighs. After moments of deliberating, of hesitating, and of sobbing out loud in an attempt to soothe my own battered heart, I finally slip the soap between my legs, slowly cleaning myself. More red accompanies the bubbles of soap, the clear of the white stained by my period blood. "Damn you!" I cry out, dropping the soap from my hands just as I fall into the tub. Bringing my hands